Great. Thank you very much, Felicia, and thank you very much for joining us today for our NFL talent announcement. We're going to hear some brief remarks from the participants in the room today. Our NBC Sports Chairman, Dick Ebersol. Also in the room is Sam Flood, the producer for Football Night in America. And I'm going to turn it over to NBC Sports Chairman Dick Ebersol for an announcement of some new talent joining our NFL broadcast team.
Good afternoon to all those assembled in the East, and good morning to all others. We're very pleased today to be able to announce that joining Football Night in America are a historic Super Bowl coach whose teams have made the playoffs each of the last 10 seasons, which in my mind is unprecedented. I'm pretty sure I'm right in the modern era of football that anybody with salary cap and with the fact that you play a first-place schedule in the league now, when you have a great year, you face a stronger schedule the following year. And that's unprecedented. And that's Tony Dungy, who will be joining Football Night in America. And in addition, a fellow who's been referred to as the hardest-hitting and most effective safety of his generation, three-time All-Pro, two-time Super Bowl champion, Rodney Harrison, will be joining Football Night in America as well. We're particularly pleased because our good fortune brought us both of these gentlemen to work with us at the Super Bowl. We saw how forthright they both could be in their opinions, so there's none of that fear that oftentimes happens when you are bringing a new analyst from the game into a particular sport as to how freewheeling they'll be with their opinions. I think you'll find over the course of the next few minutes that both of them have no hesitation talking about the game they love in both positive and critical terms. Coach Dungy.
Thank you, Dick. It's very, very exciting for me personally to be here. I've gotten to know the NBC people over the last few years doing the night games and production meetings, and fortunately we were on quite a bit. I had developed a personal relationship with Dick Ebersol that's been phenomenal, and that was probably the biggest part of my decision to come. It kind of reminds me of when I went to Pittsburgh and there was Art Rooney Sr. and Chuck Knoll. It's the same type of thing, learning and being in an environment where you know you're going to be treated well, but you're going to learn from the best. And I look at it that way and looking forward to it. The Super Bowl was a tremendous experience. I thought Sam Flood, the director, took some new guys and showed us what to do and was very patient with us and brought out the best in new people. And that was exciting. It was fun for me. And so when Dick came to me and said that we could put this together and do it Sunday night and still I would have the weekdays free, it became very enticing. And I look forward to keeping myself involved in a game that I really love.
Rodney?
Thank you for having me. This is a tremendous opportunity right now for me. My story is a little different. I really wasn't too familiar with Dick Ebersol and who he was. For years, I've seen him in production meetings, and I just thought he was a tall guy with stringy hair and really bad jeans and a bad T-shirt until Andrea Kramer informed me of who he was just recently. So I got a chance to meet him, and I had to tell him that, hey, I never knew who you were, but for them to afford me the opportunity to come on board a wonderful network transitioning from football, this was a tremendous opportunity to work with Tony Dungy and Dan Patrick and Jerome Bettis and the guys at the Super Bowl. I was very elated to have that opportunity, as well as working with Sam Flood, an intense but very knowledgeable guy, very patient guy, a guy that taught me a lot within the 5-6 days that I was there. And I'm ready like a sponge to sit and absorb information from Tony, to learn from all these great people here with a wealth of knowledge and experience. And just like I played a game, I'm going to be honest, I'm going to be forthright, and I'm going to do it with passion. And that's the only way I know. And I know Tony, I've talked to him. He feels the same way. We're going to be honest, but we're going to be fair. And I think that's what we provide.
Before we take questions, one other thing I want to add, because we will have subsequent announcements relating to Football Night in America over the next month to 6 weeks, but one major change will come in the format of this year's show. We are clearing out more time to talk football, in particular about the game that follows us. We're very pleased with the schedule that we have this year that features so many really great rivalry games throughout the course of the whole season on Sunday night. There are plenty of other great games, but rivalry games that have been intense over a period of decade after decade after decade, be it the NFC East, be it things like New England and Indianapolis, or what's gone down in recent years between the Philadelphia Eagles, the Chicago Bears, et cetera. So it's all there. And we're going to clear out more time, which means starting for these guys with the first Sunday night game, which is the first time the studio show's in operation on Sunday night, September 13th, they'll have a chance really to talk about what they think about the Chicago Bears and the Green Bay Packers, which is our first game up in Green Bay on September 13th.
And those are going to be exciting times for us to be able to talk about specific games and rivalry games like that. I can remember when Lovie Smith went there and saying, we have to beat the Green Bay Packers. That's what this job is all about in Chicago. And I think they made a move to specifically do that and going out to get Jay Cutler because of Green Bay's defense and all the press man coverage that we've got to have that threat. And I think they took a risk, I think they took that risk specifically with beating the Green Bay Packers in mind.
What do you think of that move? What do you think about picking up Jay Cutler? I mean, considering the background of what went on in Denver in the offseason and so on.
I really think Chicago gave up a lot to get a quarterback who they believe is going to be the final piece to the puzzle, but I'm not sure has won enough to merit that yet. It may turn out to be a great move, but I think the jury's out, and to me it was a risky move, but I think one that was done with the idea of beating one team.
All right, so you want to take your questions here?
Phyllis, let's open up to questions, please.
Thank you. And that is star one to pose a question. We'll go to Jim Williams of the Washington Examiner.
Thank you very much. Two quick questions, one to Coach Dungy and one to Sam. Coach, with first of all, congratulations. And second of all, with this new role that you have, do you look forward to having an opportunity to sit back and analyze the games from the booth as opposed to putting in all the time coaching?
Well, I enjoyed putting the time in coaching, but I am looking forward to trying to bring a coach's view of the big picture to the fans. And I think one of the enticing things about this is we're going to do a lot of explaining why things happen. We will see by 7:15 we know what happened during the day, and the challenge is going to be explaining the whys, and that's what I'm looking forward to.
Thank you. And to Sam real quick, it seems that the show has evolved over the last couple of years. Now with what Dick had just mentioned with more time, how do you hope to work all of the guys that you have in and make it all work cohesively?
We are working on the plan right now and don't want to talk too much further about it. Today right now is about Rodney and Tony, the new agenda. We're continuing to develop. In fact, we're going down to the studio in about an hour to start rehearsing with these two guys and trying a few things out and continue to create a new dynamic in the studio.
I think, Jim, it's fair to say without going any further than we plan to in this meeting that part of this pregame operation will be situated in the stadium as well.
We'll go to Rachel Cohen of the Associated Press.
For Coach Dungy, you mentioned obviously having the weekdays free was a big deal. Did you initially feel that maybe TV wasn't a possibility because of the schedule you wanted to have, and what was sort of the minimum of what you felt would work as far as how, in some ways, how little time you'd have to devote to a TV job?
Well, I really didn't go into this off season thinking about TV at all, and Dick mentioned to me, just said, hey, would you like to do the Super Bowl? It's right in Tampa. see how you like it. And it was a great experience. It was a lot of fun, and to see the technology they have to make a great production was fascinating. Then we started kicking things around, and I said I really didn't want to miss my son's high school football and Fridays and some ministry things I was doing during the week. And he said, well, I think this just might be a great format for you because it would basically be Saturday and Sunday. And I talked to my wife, and we thought we could make that work family-wise and still give me a chance to do a lot of the things that I want to do in Tampa. I just think it's going to be a perfect fit.
You know, let me add that I don't think I've ever told this to Tony or Sam or Rodney. I was in a ride in a car with Al Michaels after a game in San Diego early last season or mid-season, and I told him about one of the glaring weaknesses, which I blame totally on myself, not having a coach in the studio for Football Night in America. And I asked him for his thoughts, and he said, well, any idea about having a coach should begin and start with having Tony Dungy. And so Al first put the thought in my mind, but I never felt right in these production meetings that we were talking about earlier that normally take place on Fridays with the home team at their facility, and a small group of us, about four or five of us, meet with the coach or the key players, like I did many times with Rodney as well. I didn't feel right about bringing it up with Tony while he was going through his season, but his last game, as it turned out, was our coverage of his playoff game in San Diego in January, and the night before that game, the visiting team had come in, and we had met with them at their hotel. And when Tony was done meeting with us, I followed him out in the hallway. I felt that over the 10 or 11 times we'd met and several times talked on the phone about issues other than football, that I owed him one thing, which was to say to him how much luck I wished him and good fortune with what he was going to do with his life, which I thought at that point was very much going to be wrapped up in dealing with the youth of America who've been largely disadvantaged or even abandoned by so many people, and that's what he wanted to dedicate his living ministry to. At least that's how I saw it. But I wanted him to know that he didn't have to give up on football, and that if he ever chose television, I hoped at the time he would pick up the phone and talk to me. And fortunately, about 2 weeks later, we talked about the Super Bowl being right next to his home in Tampa, and boom, it went from there.
We'll go to John Tomasi of the Boston Herald.
Rodney, I'm curious, when you were playing, what was your opinion of former players going into the broadcast booth? Did you respect their opinions? Were you annoyed by them? A little of both?
Well, certain guys, you definitely respect their opinions, but other guys, I felt like they were afraid to come out and really tell the hardcore truth. And I think as an analyst, it's your job to be fair but honest, and sometimes you have to be brutally honest with guys that you play with, guys that are your friends, but yet and still, you can't shy away from certain questions. I mean, if there's a question in week 8 or week 10 when the Patriots play against the Colts, if Tom Brady's not performing, everyone's going to question his knee. And if I feel like if it's his knee that's bothering him, then I'm going to have to mention that. And Tom would have to respect that. As a player, you have to respect the fact that, you know, you're going to get criticized. And sometimes, more times than not, you're probably going to get praised. But at the same time, I'm not going to be afraid to do that, and I think that's something that I'm not afraid to bring. When I played, I didn't have many friends, and I'm sure I'm not going to make a lot of friends now, so that's just what it is.
We'll go to Kevin Allen of the Chicago Sun-Times.
Rodney, congratulations on a great career. We were wondering here in Chicago whether you'll be continuing some of the charity work and work you do with kids here in the South Suburbs.
Yeah, that's home, Kevin. Thank you. I have a football program out there. It's called the Markham Patriots that we have over 300 kids. I do an annual football camp that it's over 300 kids that attend. We're doing some summer basketball camps as well. I'm actually, since I have more time now during the week, I'm going to actually step up my charity work. But those are the things that are very passionate and near to my heart is giving kids an opportunity to have some opportunities that I didn't have growing up. And I think that's so important. And, you know, when I made my statement earlier today, I felt like the one thing as a player, one thing as a coach, you can bring along with you is someone you can help out. And it's not, you know, my last message was, it's not about me and it's not about football players. It's about helping and bringing other people along. And once you get that in your heart, I mean, it's some tremendous things you can do.
Barry Jackson, the Miami Herald.
Hi, Dick. A couple of things. I know there's more about the show which you'd like to announce in coming weeks, but I wondered if you can say yet whether Barber will return in studio or whether he'll be more of a reporter as he was in December.
He will be out on the road covering the big games of the day and appearing many times during the course of the show from those other game sites.
Sure, and the one other thing was obviously with the contract extensions with the two other over-the-air rights holders. Are you anticipating one soon?
Barry, you know I never discuss business. Come on.
We'll go to Bob Wolfley of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel.
Yeah, Coach Dungy, you have me intrigued about your notion of the Bears' new quarterback, Jay Cutler. How good do you think he is? You said, the trade the Bears made was a risky one. Would you consider, I take it then you don't consider him among the elite quarterbacks in the league. Is he the best quarterback in his division?
I think that remains to be seen. I think he's a very talented guy who can throw the ball very well. But quarterbacking is so much about leadership. It's so much about doing things under pressure. There's going to be a lot of pressure on him in Chicago because he's being viewed as the missing piece to the puzzle to get them back to the Super Bowl. We'll see about the maturity level. That's what I would question. And some of the things that happened leading to him leaving Denver, that would concern me as a coach. So that's my question. I think he can make all the throws, but quarterbacking is much more than just making throws.
We'll go to Sam Farmer of the Los Angeles Times.
Hi, Tony. I wanted to ask you about, and I came in late, so I apologize if you've already talked about this, about Vince Young. You talked about quarterbacking being about leadership and handling pressure. Obviously, that's come into question in Vince Young's case, and he's a player that you know well. I wonder what your thoughts on him are, and I'd be interested in Rodney Harrison's thoughts, too, on that. Is he a starting quarterback? Do you think he will be a starting quarterback?
Well, I'm a big Vince Young fan, and I've gotten to know him from playing against him twice a year. I think he did a tremendous job at University of Texas and leading that program. And I think he was on his way in Tennessee, but some things happened, and he's going to have to recover and rebound, and he's going to have to reestablish that leadership. And right now I think the team does look at Kerry Collins as being the leader, and that is going to be a hill that he's going to have to climb, and it'll be interesting to see if he does it. I'm pulling for him, and I hope he does. I think he is a good person, and I think he can develop into a big-time quarterback. But that's the question right now. And right now I think you'd have to say Kerry Collins is the leader of that offense.
Well, unfortunately for Vince Young, this is not the University of Texas. This is the National Football League. And whereas you have to win here and you have to win now. Obviously, he's a very talented guy. I think what happened to him is he got caught up in the knots of football. Somewhat of the dark side, partying, not prioritizing making football his number one thing. And I think, you know, a lot of these young kids nowadays, they come in the league, they think that they can survive on talent alone, and it's not that way. Like Coach Dungy said, yes, you have the physical ability, but leadership is more so about, you know, putting in the work consistently, showing up every day mentally, being able to handle the pressure, the ups and downs, and being that consistent leader such as Tom Brady and Peyton Manning. Will this guy ever start again? I feel like he will, but I think right now he's going through an important time in his career and his life where he's really learning how to be mature and learning how to be a young man in the National Football League under so much scrutiny and pressure. So I think this is a critical time for him. If he doesn't become a starter in the next 2 years, you'll find him as a career backup.
We'll go to Richard Sandomir of the New York Times.
Hey, Dick, can you explain what you meant by saying that in the revamped version of the Football Night that you'll be that everybody will be discussing more football? I'm not sure I understand what you were discussing before.
You know, Rich, you probably do have that second career as a teacher of English, because my remark is probably inadequate for what I was trying to say. I think in the format of the show, we have failed to clear out enough time to discuss football. And we've been too locked in on highlights for every game. We'll still have highlights for every game, and every big game of the day will get special attention, much more emphasis on the whys of what happened at that game than we've had in the past. But most of all, sort of prioritizing what we give time to, and I feel that we've been neglect in that area. And you know, if you would like a compliment, I'll pay it to you now. You told me a couple of weeks into year one that I wasn't making enough out of what was going to follow the game itself that we had, because they were usually big games. And you know what? As time has passed, I've mellowed and come to the point of view that you were right.
We'll go to Jim Gentonio, Arizona Republic.
Yeah, Rodney, when you look at the Arizona Cardinals, do you look at them as a one-time wonder from last year, or is it something you think they can keep on being a threat?
Well, I've always felt like as long as you have the key ingredient in place, which is the quarterback, I've always felt like you had a chance to win football games. And with them re-signing Kurt Warner and having a young defense, very athletic, a lot of good weapons on offense, I think they're going to be right there. But the biggest issue for them is coming back that sophomore season after having so much success. Will the guys still pull in the same time? Will they work even harder? Will they continue to stay focused? Because it only takes a little bit lack of focus to end up, you know, 6-9 or you know, 7-9 or something like that. So just being on a team that went 1-15 and being on the team 18-0, it's not all talent. It's about being focused and handling certain situations and continuing to work as though you haven't had any success the previous season.
We had a situation, 97, my first playoff team in Tampa. We came back in 98 thinking we had a better team, and we did have a more talented team, but we didn't make the playoffs. Number one, you're no longer the hunter, you're the hunted, and that is a different mentality that players have to learn sometimes when they haven't been a playoff team. Now every week is going to be a big game, and that's a little bit different, and they're going to have to learn that. There will be Arizona, Atlanta, Miami. There's going to be someone in there that doesn't quite handle this transition to being the hunted as well.
You know, Tony, thinking that or listening a little while ago to Rodney talk about the situation in New England and how he would face it, you know, I can honestly say that no one sat down and plotted it out this way, but three of the first five Sunday nights of the Sunday Night Football schedule feature the Colts on the road in tough situations. The last Sunday in September, it's the Colts at Arizona, which ought to be an interesting aerial parade. And exactly 2 weeks later, on October 11th, in perhaps the toughest circumstances that you would coach in on a regular basis, at Nashville, that game every year against the Titans. I mean, how do you look forward or not forward to, you know, having yourself be put on the spot that early on?
Well, I'm looking forward to it. Indianapolis built a tradition of being able to go on the road and play well and win. Jim Caldwell is a tremendous mind, and he's going to be a great coach. He's going to have a challenging schedule early on, and dealing with those expectations and being able to go on the road and win, that's going to be the test. And I think they're going to be up to it. It's funny how the schedule has laid out, that those challenges are right there early, and it's going to be important for them to get off to a good start, because that is going to be one of the things. If they don't, well, Coach Dungy would have done this. He would have done this differently, and they're going to have to put that behind them and just realize it's a different era now.
Well, and then, of course, the whole schedule kind of, not only for us in terms of one of the biggest games of the year, but more importantly, where you and Rodney get to face off against each other. We're fortunate enough to have the New England playing Indianapolis this year on Sunday, December 15th.
Always a big Sunday in November. We knew every year that was gonna happen. It was going to be somewhere in November we were going to play those guys.
But it seems like lately it's been always the Patriots going to Indianapolis. So I don't know who you hanging out with the schedule, making the schedule.
Well, it took us 5 years to get you guys in. Yeah. But no, those are great games. I know there were games that we looked forward to. We always, when that schedule came out, where is the New England game? Where is it played? What night of the week? It's a game that we're going to have to win, and I'm sure it'll be the same for both sides. They're looking forward to that game.
What would you tell? I'm sorry, Rodney. What would you tell your teams as they prepared for that game? What would you tell them specifically about facing Rodney?
Well, Rodney was much like Bob Sanders in that they would move him around, and he played in a lot of different places, and you had to locate where he was, and we wanted to come up with things to counteract where he was. And that was one thing that Peyton was always going to be aware of, and he was very much the key to their defenses, and we wanted to keep him off balance, try to keep him guessing, but more than anything, try to go away from where he was.
By the way, did it surprise you how public Peyton got 2 weeks ago with his frustrations about what's gone on with Coach Moore and Coach Mudd?
You know, the assistant coaching situation right now in the pension plan, it's very frustrating to everyone. I've talked to a number of assistant coaches that aren't happy with the way things are going and the decisions they're forced to make, and it has disrupted things. And one of the things we had in Indy that was great, we had stability, and everyone knew what was going to happen, and now for the first time in a long time, a little bit of instability, and I think they'll overcome it. I was a little surprised to see some of the remarks in public. I'm sure those are things that are being discussed and are always discussed, but that was one of our things, keep everything in-house, and I'm pretty sure that Peyton regrets now maybe some of those comments getting out, because you don't want to air your laundry. You want to keep it in-house.
Well, I think that that's, you know, and I discussed this with Tony, Coach Dungy, that really gives Tom Brady the edge over Peyton Manning in terms of leadership, because, you know, he's a guy that if this went on in New England, he wouldn't come out publicly and he wouldn't, you know, make a big fuss about it. I think as a leader on the team, you being Peyton Manning, Hall of Famer, you need to keep it in-house. And, you know, you have so many guys looking up to you, and once they sense panic on your part, then all of a sudden they start getting nervous. So, I mean, I have a lot of respect for Peyton Manning, but, you know, this is a guy that he needs to, you know, at times control his emotion and not allow these things that should stay in-house get outside of those walls.
Well, I'm not sure I would agree with that as being panic, but it is a frustrating situation. And our assistant coaches are trying to figure out exactly what's happening with this pension plan and where it's going, and it forced two of our coaches basically to retire when they didn't want to, and what was going to happen, how that's all going to play out, back and forth with the commissioner, back and forth with the IRS, and it's a very, very frustrating situation, but I think it'll be handled well, and I think they'll come through it in pretty good shape.
But as a player, Coach, your job is to play football. You can't control some of the political aspects of what's going on. And I know he's frustrated, but you have to understand, this is OTAs, okay? It's not even mini camp yet, so there's no sense of panicking. I mean, it's still early. So these things could be worked out, the communication. I mean, he's been running this offense for 11 years. It's not like it's new to him. So it just disappointed me, being that it's so early in the off season, that he will come out publicly and say these things. Being that, you know, yes, they no longer are you working with them, but it's 11 years that this guy, I mean, he has all the parts in place, and for him to come out and publicly, you know, get upset like that, I just thought it was a sense of panic.
Great. Felicia, we have time for one more question, please.
We'll go to Calvin Watkins of AOL Sports.
I got one question for Tony, one for Dick. Tony, what do you think about Michael Vick's chances of returning to the NFL?
Well, I do hope Michael gets the opportunity to come back for a number of reasons. I think that he has paid for his crime, and I think he deserves a second chance. I think he's a talented young man, and I think he's got a great story to tell. If he does come back and make it, I think it can be very inspiring to young people who make a mistake to realize that one mistake doesn't doom you. So I do hope it happens. I'm not sure what the market is going to be. It's going to take a special situation, a team that is really looking for a certain type of quarterback, and a strong organization, because there is going to be some backlash against him. But I think he deserves it, and I think if he gets a second chance, I think he'll do well, and I think you'll see a different type of Michael Vick off the field, which I think is key.
Felicia, I'm calling an audible. We have time for a few more questions.
And once again, that is star one if you'd like to pose a question. We'll go to Richard Sandomir.
Rodney, can you give us some insight during pregame meetings with before an Indianapolis game? What Coach Belichick would say about Coach Dungy?
Well, he never talked specifically about Coach Dungy, but he would refer to them as they, how they would attack us, and really their philosophy. And I mean, let's face it. I mean, we knew going in that they're probably the most disciplined team, most fundamentally sound team that we're going to face. I mean, they weren't going to make a lot of mistakes. They're going to play hard every play. They're going to be very aggressive, very physical. They're going to change up a bunch of things. Offensively, they're going to do a lot of shifts and motions at times, and other times they're going to come out and just line up and say, you know, we're better than you. We're going to kick your butt. So he had a lot of respect for the Indianapolis Colts, and we always I told Coach Dungy this yesterday, I said we really never slept the week that we played Indianapolis, because they had so many different audibles, so many different formations, so many different transitions to their team. When I first started playing against Indianapolis, they're a very impatient offense. They wanted the big play. They didn't settle for 4 or 5 yards, but when Peyton ended up having his most successful seasons, as Tony Dungy said, they started running the ball, becoming more patient, as a result, he threw 49 touchdowns. So, once they added that element of patience and that run game, it really changed the dynamic of their offense, and it took them to the next level.
We'll go to Sam Farmer of the Los Angeles Times.
Guys, I wanted to ask you about the Chargers. I think it's maybe the third week of the year, it's Chargers and Steelers. How does Sean, and both of you, both Tony and Rodney have been on teams that have really developed a rivalry with this team. How does the return of Sean Merriman, assuming that he is healthy, affect that defense and sort of upgrade that team?
Well, Sean Merriman is a guy that you have to game plan for. He's a difference maker. He's a special player. You can't get a running back on him. You can't get a tight end on him in the pass rush. Many people are going to have help for the left tackle. He dictates a lot of things when he's out there on the field. So it's definitely going to add to them if he's able to come back. But they showed last year that they had a team that didn't just rely on him. They're a solid football team. They've given us problems, probably as much problems as anyone over the years, and he's a big part of it. But those special players, they make a huge difference.
I look at it from an emotional standpoint. He's a guy, he's a high-energy guy, he's a difference maker. I mean, you see, he's like the James Harrison of the San Diego Chargers. You can't block him with one guy. He can do so many different things. He can play defensive line. He can play outside linebacker. He can play middle linebacker. And I've even seen him drop into coverage. So a guy that I'm thoroughly impressed with. A guy, at times, he will do his own thing, kind of like Seau did early in his career. And he will get out of place at times. So he's a guy, at times people say, well, maybe you should stay away from him, where in fact I think sometimes you need to go at him and force him to really stick to the discipline of the defense and make him become a football player in all aspects and not just a guy out there running around making plays. But I have a lot of respect for Sean Merriman, and he's definitely a guy that can change the course of the game.
We'll go to Tom Curran, NBCSports.com.
Hey, Rodney, Tony, congratulations.
Thank you.
Question for both of you. We're 9 years into the decade of the 2000s. Who is the team of the decade in your estimation, both of you fellas?
Oh, I think you have to say the Patriots. What they did, and people, you can't even envision how hard that is to stay there at that level and win. And they were the team that everyone was chasing. And, you know, it probably started in 2001. So I'd have to say the Patriots.
I would definitely have to agree. You look at
what a shock.
You look at all the transition that the Patriots teams have gone through. Every single year that I've been there, Tom, you guys have always said how old we were and how washed up we were, and to be able to have the type of success that we've had, even not making the playoffs last year, overcoming Tom Brady's injury, Matt Castle doing a great job filling in guys, losing Adam Vinatieri and a multitude of guys. I think you would definitely have to say the Patriots, just the consistency, the Super Bowl victories, the appearances, 18-0, but Indianapolis is not far behind.
Okay, Felicia, we have time for one more question. This time I really mean it.
Okay, we'll go to Matt Sohn, Pro Football Weekly.
Hey, Tony, I got two quick follow-ups for you, with two answers that you were saying earlier. First off, in regards to the coaching situation in Indianapolis, you say that things will be worked out. Can you kind of elaborate on that in terms of, is Tom Moore going to be calling the plays next year? And the second question is really quick about Michael Vick. If you were running an organization, would you want him on your team?
First question, I'm not sure what's going to happen. Jim Caldwell is going to have to make that decision, and it's really, I think that's what Peyton was so frustrated about. I don't think anyone knows right now, because there's a lot of people involved, the commissioner, the coaches association, the IRS, and a number of things. So that will remain to be seen. But whoever calls the plays, they're going to be fine. They've got some capable people, and they'll move on. The next man will be up if it's not Tom. If I were running the team, what I know about Michael Vick and what I've seen from him, I would definitely give him an opportunity to play. If I needed a quarterback, you know, I would not be afraid of his past.
You know, Tony, let me ask you one question. Now, going back to the issue of Coach Moore and Coach Mudd, the issue really is that now that they've put in for their retirement, theoretically, the way the law works, and I'm no lawyer, but are they even able to be considered to call the plays, particularly Coach Moore, because didn't he call the plays before, and aren't those the kind of things that when you retire you have to give up?
Exactly. They have to be out a certain amount of time. I don't know what that time is. And then if they come back, they have to come back in a different capacity. So what does that mean? What exactly does it mean? Can you be not the offensive coordinator but still call the plays? You know, that's what everyone – that's the unknown. And that's kind of the thing that's brought the frustration. What exactly is it? And it's gray areas. Nobody can define it for sure. So we'll have to see how it plays out.
Well, I say thank you, everybody. We look forward to you joining with us not only in September, but with the first football game since Super Bowl on August 9th, the Hall of Fame game with the Titans and the Bills. It'll be fun to see how the Titans have put it all together again, because in so many ways they were the best team, certainly during the regular season in football last year. And Buffalo has this this new receiver whose name escapes me at this point in time. And then obviously Coach Dungy will be sitting on the edge of his seat for our final exhibition game, which is Sunday, August 30th, when, believe it or not, Mr. Cutler has to go back into that community he obviously loves so much, Denver, as the coach of the Bears. And that's our second of two exhibition games before the season starts on NBC Thursday, September 10th, with the Titans and the Steelers.
Great. Thanks, Dick. Thanks to Sam, Coach Dungy, and Rodney. Thanks to everybody on the call today. We'll have extensive highlights from today's call going out in a couple of hours.
And that concludes today's conference call. Thank you for your participation.